And welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. And we welcome you guys back to yet another breakdown episode of yet another non-conference victory for Minnesota. As it was a strange game on Saturday night in what I would imagine has to be, for those of you who know what this is, a scorenami. As the Golden Gopher football team scores 25 points, Eastern Michigan scores 6. And just like we told you, boy, was the under the easy pick, Luke.
Yeah, I'm very proud of us. We both took the under. We both hit. I got to check my spreadsheet, but I think we both took Eastern Michigan to cover, which they did.
19, which I picked 20 is this.
Yeah. And the time of our recording, it was 20.5. So if people saw something different, we're sorry in advance. But we only go with what we did, or, you know, what we saw when we recorded. So we know the lines move, but, I thought that was pretty interesting. So Ryan, I do want to mention real quickly, we probably should get some housekeeping things under order. Most importantly, Ryan, this is episode 300 of Gopher Gridiron Radio. Can you imagine when we started this, you know, all those years back, you came to my house, and here we are 300 episodes later?
The funny part is I have had multiple people in the last week ask me how we started this podcast. And the cliff notes, for those of you who are new or just don't remember, it all started because Luke sent me a random email. I didn't know who he was. He was like, hey, do you want to start a Gopher football podcast? And I think my response back to you 5-6 years ago, whatever it was, is, what's a podcast?
I don't think it was quite like that. Yes, I did send you a random email. I should note that I send a lot of random emails, and that actually works sometimes. And you at the time were transitioning from where you had been previously to Scout, which ended up being purchased by 247. And I said, hey, now might be a time to start a podcast. And I think you were hesitant at first, but then you're like, yeah, let's do it. And you showed up in my house, and here we are 300 episodes later.
Yeah, over a million downloads later too, which it blows my mind for a Gopher football podcast, but we appreciate each and every one of you listeners. It's just 300 episodes.
Yeah, it's crazy. And then we probably should also note that Derek won't be joining us this week. He's unable to join. Obviously, we also would like to listen to Derek talk about this game. It was an interesting game. We'll get into it, but getting his perspective, obviously from a schematic and philosophical perspective, is always valued. So I'm going to do my best. I'm not going to try and be Derek Burns. I'm going to give my breakdown opinions, so you'll hear more of me. So if that's something you don't want, just fast forward through my parts and just go to Ryan's parts. Deal? All right. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Off to a rousing start here without Derek.
I do have a couple of quick stories though, Ryan. I was able to take my boys to the Dinkytown Athletes tailgate. First and foremost, if people don't realize how awesome some of these student athletes are, please be a part of Dinkytown Athletes, because it's a way that you get to interact with them. I was able to bring my boys with, and my boys played bags. My boys were 2 and 4, right? They basically played bags with 60 to 70% of the women's basketball team the entire time. I had like babysitters the entire time I was there. It was really awesome. Got to meet some awesome Gopher fans. And I think part of what makes college sports awesome in general, and being a part of the tailgates, is getting to meet a lot of the people, and people I'd never met before, some that listen to the podcast and really like the podcast, but also just talking to people that have been lifelong Gopher fans. I talked to a couple guys. I believe their names were Steve and Dave, or it might have been, I think it's Steve and Dave. I'm really bad at names, and that's not just a bit, Ryan. You can confirm that, correct?
I can confirm. Oh, yeah.
So these are two guys that actually grew up in Minneapolis. They actually grew up in the Prospect Park area, right? So you're very close to campus there, right? And they were telling me, and I found this fascinating, just a sign of how times have changed. When they were kids, they would walk down to Memorial Stadium. They'd be 9 and 10 years old, or take their bikes down, and they'd find people that would just give them tickets. And then that's how they started their journey into Gopher football, right? And now you've got kids today that probably are starting their journey with Gopher football or Gopher athletics by watching TikTok or YouTube or Instagram or whatever, right? And they're getting into football that way or going to a game and experiencing it. But man, I can't even imagine a 9 or 10 year old kid walking up to Huntington Bank Stadium going, anybody got a free ticket?
And then they're able to get in with that.
Yeah, they legit
day and age.
Yeah, like they were telling me they legit went to numerous games where they just like showed up and like the scalpers or people were done and they just got tickets for free and would walk in, and that's how they started their Gopher fandom.
That's wild. I mean, it's a good origin story.
Isn't it though? It's like they've been, you know, they didn't need anybody else to help them get into Gopher football. They literally just walked down and did it themselves, and they've been, you know, diehard fans ever since. I don't know. I just thought that was a neat, unique perspective on how society evolves, how much it's changed. You wouldn't see that today, right? But I just thought that was really, really fascinating.
100%. Have I ever told you my Gopher women's basketball connection, by the way?
I do know that you were one of the practice players, right?
Yeah, I was one of the male players that practices against the Gopher.
How many years did you do that?
I did that for 2 years, and I got the absolute crap beat out of me every day for 2 years by Amanda Zowie.
Yeah, she was good.
Who ended up being the number 2 overall pick in the WNBA draft.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was... I was in great shape back then, back when I was in my University of Minnesota days. There'd only be like 6 of us practice players that would show up on a given day. Mm-hmm. So obviously when they run 5s, you got 1 sub and you never got that sub. At least that's the way I felt.
Yeah.
But those women's basketball players are some of the nicest people on the planet. I'll tell you that much.
And they're also incredibly good basketball players. But yeah, I mean, just an awesome event, that Dinkytown Athletes Tailgate. It was for members. You know, if you're not a member, you know, check it out. But man, it was a really fun. They've done 2 really, really good events that I think, you know, people, if you're not a member, it's worth being a member just to go to those events, especially if you have kids. My kids had a blast. My son basically kept pointing to Dawson Garcia and goes, "Daddy, that's the tallest man I've ever seen." You know, like,
welcome to 6'9", my friend.
Yeah, exactly. Oh no, he's like 6'11". Like, he was just towering. Oh man, it was wild. Okay, so we'll get that out of the way. But in general, you know, just, you know, being able to be on campus and just, you know, walk around and see the energy, man, it was fun to get a chance to do that. We took the light rail down. My kids love going on the light rail, so just a great day for them, and just so fun to interact with so many different Gopher fans and so many different people that love the podcast. So it was a blast. Hopefully at some point maybe you'll get to meet Derek Burns one day.
One day I'll meet my second cousin. The only other thing I want to note is, in a kind of random listener related note, and I have no idea if these people listen to the podcast or not, but Luke, I was taking my 162-pound steed for a walk, and I went past a house that had a giant Gopher bus sitting in the driveway.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And here's my question to those people: is, if you live in the city of Roseville, I'm not going to say where, just because I like a little bit of privacy in comparison to where I live. But if you live in Roseville and you have a giant Gopher bus in your driveway, reach out.
Yeah,
you're my neighbor, it turns out. So. Come over and say hi.
Yeah, that's hilarious. I'll come over. One time we should actually like record in one of our respective garages in Roseville. I'll commute over your direction. So that would be fun. Okay, so let's get into this Gopher victory. 25-6, a very standard football score there, Ryan Burns. And the Gophers moved to 2-0 at home. And Eastern Michigan falls to 1-1 on the season, their first loss of the season. I think probably what makes the most sense is probably to start with the offense. We talked a lot of defense last time to start, and I think I think this is probably where people want to focus. You know, in some ways, this is kind of a Jekyll and Hyde approach that we've seen so far. They threw the ball a ton. I think Ethan threw 44 times. This time, he only threw 15 times. The Gophers ended up rushing the ball 56 times and featuring Darius Taylor. You know, what a breakout performance for him. You know, to start 33 carries, 193 yards. A touchdown on the game. In general, it was very, very clear the focal point of this offense was going to be, we are going to establish the run. And if you've been a Gopher fan and you follow this program through the PJ Fleck years so far, this is something that they do early in the season, is they work on stuff in non-conference games when they feel like they're playing an inferior opponent. And there's no question that was the strategy on Saturday.
Yeah, I mentioned it on the pregame show on KFAN, which if you haven't heard, I'm on the KFAN Gopher Football pregame show every week, 80 minutes before the game. And then Gopher Football Sunday is also back with me and Justin Gard on Sunday mornings. I'll be on about 8:15 every Sunday morning. But what I mentioned to him was one of the big points of emphasis this week during practice for Minnesota was RTB. Now, if you think of RTB, you're thinking of row the boat. Well, for the purposes of this podcast and for this Gopher football team, this week it was run the ball. And let's just say maybe at certain points during practice this week, it was RTFB, run the bleeping ball. Because this is still a Fleck-led team. And I think they were a little bit embarrassed about how poor or how inefficient they were running the football in game one against Nebraska. I think it was 58 total yards with their running backs. And how do they respond? Well, I wish Derek Burns would be here to tell it to you, but if I have to put on my offensive line evaluation hat, the guys up front did a much, much better job in this game to me. I think you certainly saw it as the game wore on, where they were getting pushed to the second and third levels. I think they had 8 different carries go over 10 yards in this game. You look at the running back specifically, 50 carries for 286 yards. So both Sean Tyler and Darius Taylor averaged over 5.5 yards per carry. There wasn't like there's one giant carry in there, or I should say giant explosive, that skews it. Minnesota was consistently getting where they needed to get to on the ground. And to me, it felt like the communication up front was a lot better. Now, how much of that is they actually knew what Eastern Michigan was going to run compared to last week, where they really didn't know what Nebraska's maybe shifts and motions defensively we're going to be on some calls. I think that certainly plays a part in it. But I also think just getting challenged the way that they did this past week. I think what PJ Fleck would tell you is that they really challenged the Minnesota moving company up front to be better. I had heard some rumblings, especially late in the week, that maybe there were going to be some changes coming to the offensive line. Fleck elected to go with the same 5 starters. And I think you saw a progression from some of these new guys like Tyler Cooper and Martez Lewis at the guard spots. I think you saw Ariante Ursary and Quinn Carroll certainly play well in spots as well. So to me, it just felt like there was a lot more continuity from game one to game two. Now, it also helps to have a guy like Darius Taylor. But we talked last week about how there was only 3 missed tackles forced from the running backs. Well, there were 8 total on these 50 carries on Saturday night. So, yeah, they broke more tackles. But I would also say, when you look at the PFF stuff, there was a lot more designed yards. There was yards after contact, obviously, in spots for both Darius and Sean. But I do think it started up front, and that's what you should do against what I thought was a well-coached team in Eastern Michigan, because I do think Eastern Michigan is going to end up getting to a bowl game out of the MAC. But Minnesota's offensive line, I think, is the storyline there for me in the running attack. Before we get to kind of the running backs, what did you think of how the offensive line played?
Yeah, you definitely could see there was more of a push, you know, having I watched the game at home ultimately, you know, having the 2 young kids, but there was definitely a push, and Tommy Olsen did a good job of highlighting the fact that, you know, they were able to get a push, and at times, you know, running backs weren't getting touched until the second level. And they were, the running backs were also doing a better job of actually breaking some tackles as well. But most importantly, that initial push is what you need to have success running the ball. And that's what we're able to see. What we were able to see yesterday. I thought that Tyler Cooper played a lot better, relative to what we saw in game one. But you're right. all across that offensive line, it was better play in getting that push. And largely, too, they did a good job in pass pro as well, even given the minimal, you know, attempts. I guess it's 15 attempts on the game. You know, in the end, I thought that they were really pretty effective. I get some people are probably going to be frustrated that they focus so much on running the ball. But when you look, I don't have frustration on the approach that they took. Ultimately, my frustration, Ryan, kind of delved into once they got into the red zone and their inability to score touchdowns, right? I know on the season right now, in the red zone, their success rate is 87.5% in terms of scoring. This was the first game that they, you know, lost on four downs. But yeah, in the end, I'm just frustrated with what the approach has been right now in the red zone.
It was the second question of the press conference afterwards. The first from yours truly was, I looked at PJ and I said, talk to me about your red zone efficiency / inefficiency tonight, because they had, this game, I think people feel a lot different about the offense in this game if they were just able to put the ball in the end zone more. Now, obviously, what an easy and thoughtful thing to say, Ryan. Everybody knows that. But you literally had six of your eight possessions end within the Eastern Michigan, I think, 6-yard line. You never punted on the entire night. Like, let's not act like the offense was some disease thing, because it moved the ball incredibly well until it started with, instead of going second down, if it ended with and goal, then they couldn't figure it out. They ran 18 plays within the Eastern Michigan 11-yard line. And 15 of them were runs, 3 of them were passes. I would have liked to have seen some more play action down there. But the thing that Fleck noted with the red zone issues on Saturday night was they're still figuring out how to put the ball in the end zone. And what he means by that, because he expanded, he goes, the last few years we had Muhammad Ibrahim. And if you gave Muhammad Ibrahim the ball 3 times within the opponent's 10-yard line, he was eventually going to score. Well, Muhammad Ibrahim's no longer here. And you saw Minnesota give Darius Taylor some reps in the red zone. You saw them give Sean Tyler some reps in the end zone. I wouldn't say either one of them really established themselves one way or another. Now, if I had to pick between the two, I'm going to go with Darius Taylor just because he's a more north-south back. But he's got to play with lower pad level, especially in situations like that. But certainly red zone inefficiency was the issue, because the game was – I mean, imagine if they're just able to score off that opening possession where they try to run on third down and on their first drive, where Sean Tyler gets caught from behind by a linebacker, just makes a great effort play. And then on fourth down, Minnesota tries to get a little tricky with naked boot, and the corner and safety stay home because it's a well-coached Eastern Michigan team, but Minnesota goes for the, you know, kind of the jugular there. Even if they were to have handed that ball off, Luke, I believe the center got beat. And that guy would have been tackled in the backfield anyway. But the creativity aspect of it has to get better against North Carolina and moving forward, because you have a guy who's going to be a top 100 draft pick in Brevin Spanford, who is 6'7". And if you're going to flex him out as much as they do into the slot or out wide, and he's going to have a 5'11 corner on him, you're going to have to be able to use him more. I mean, I feel like the year is like 2014 and I'm screaming into the ether about Nate Wozniak trying to get some use for Minnesota in the red zone. Certainly red zone inefficiency was an issue. I don't disagree. I mean, it's the biggest wart that you have to talk about with this offense. But for me, I know everybody's upset about the red zone and the lack of pass attempts. But before we get to the lack of pass attempts, what did you think of the red zone inefficiency?
Oh, I think you nailed it. I think the thing that was perplexing is it was pretty predictable, right? And then ultimately, they did not show play action with the exception of naked boot, right? And in that naked boot situation, obviously you're not looking to throw. But that was really
the time they really did that was they tried to. It was a third down near the student section. Third and goal, and they ran a 2-man route.
Yes.
With both guys, I think it was Daniel Jackson, Lamecki Brockington, just running fades. And there was like 6 guys in coverage. And I'm thinking to myself, that's the best play. Now, Ethan nearly fitted in to Lamecki Brockington on the sideline. Yep. It was ultimately incomplete. But the question I'm fighting with myself before overreacting too much is how much of that was by design.
Yeah, exactly.
How much of that was Minnesota's just struggling to figure out what they want to do in the red zone. What is their identity? Are they a passing team in the red zone? Are they a ground and pound like they have been the last few years? And to me, that was kind of the thing I read between the lines of Fleck's answer is he doesn't know what they are in the red zone. We're all figuring it out together. You're watching it. I'm reporting on it and Fleck living it. Is they're trying to figure out what they are in the red zone quite yet?
Yeah, and I think too, I go back to that 2019 season where, you know, we were lamenting, you know, man, they're really sticking to inside outside zone, like, and they're just, that's all they seem to be repping in these non-conference games. They're getting themselves in kind of pickles, but they're finding a way to get out of it. And I feel like in some ways what we've seen in these first two games, well, not so much with Nebraska, but definitely in this game, it was like, we're working on stuff and we're not necessarily going to be trying to trick anyone. We just got to be better at the stuff that we need to do well. Right. And the best way we can do that is to rep it. And that's what they did. That's my perspective. So.
Yeah. The other thing I want to touch on before we get to the lack of pass attempts is just kind of the way it played out at running back is we got news right before the game and the availability report that comes out 2 hours ahead of time. I always tweet it out. So for those of you wanting to see it now that you won't be going to the Gopher home game, check my Twitter about 12:30 on Saturday. You'll be able to see who's in, who's out for the North Carolina game. But we got word that Bryce Williams wasn't going to play.
Do they disclose what the injury is? Or
Absolutely not. You don't even know why they're out.
Yeah, okay.
It just says out or questionable or doubtful.
Okay, got it.
And that's where Bryce Williams was not. And then you go look for him on the field. He's not dressed. It looked like he was hobbling a little bit. I don't remember him getting injured against Nebraska.
I mean, so could have been a practice for all we know, right?
Yeah, it could have been. So you don't have your third down back. You have Sean Tyler, who I guess we can start there. Sean Tyler, when he didn't put the ball on the ground, I thought looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was very efficient, obviously, 93 yards on 17 carries, 5.5 yards per carry. But that's the big issue, is three fumbles on the night. I think we've really taken for granted here over the last, say, decade of the amount of Gopher football running backs such as Shannon Brooks, Rodney Smith, Mo Ibrahim. I mean, heck, going back to – I don't remember David Cobb even having fumbling issues.
Mm-mm.
So three in one game, which at times Sean Tyler did have a fumbling issue at Western Michigan, but even in the first quarter, and he had two fumbles and eventually lost one. In the fourth quarter there.
He had that bobble too. I think on the student section side, on the handoff, it wasn't a clean exchange. He might have scored had he not bobbled that one. He definitely had some struggles there. I think officially the stats I've seen on CFBstats.com is the Gophers have two fumbles and one lost on the season. So I don't think they credited the two in the first half. But
the first one, he was probably out of bounds. The second one, the ball just went out of bounds.
Yep.
They were both on the far sideline, and then he obviously lost the third. But my question to you is this, because it's the one I'm battling with. If Bryce Williams remains out against North Carolina next week, I mean, how much equity did Sean Tyler take out of the proverbial Fleck bank?
Yeah, it's a good question. He has a history, this being Fleck, of, you know, you have to earn my trust back. And
we'll get to that, because the number one question I got last night was, where's Zach Evans? Where's Zach Evans? Where's Zach Evans? And we'll get to that here in a second. But the point I'm trying to make is, if the only guy you trust now, if you're PJ, is Darius Taylor, Darius Taylor can't absorb, as an 18-year-old true freshman, 250 carries this year.
No, and you saw him too. He was patting his helmet a lot, like seemingly what I assumed was he was asking to get out. And
high school football at Walled Lake Western in Michigan,
yeah,
a little different than playing Eastern Michigan. Bigger guys falling on you kind of hurts.
Yeah, and as well, like even after the Sean Tyler fumble, you'd still see him get that, and he didn't get the sub. So I don't know. You know, if he was gassed or, you know, what that signal really meant. I assume it was that he wanted a sub. But, man, yeah, I agree with you. They're going to have to get have a solution. And it, and if there's no trust in Sean Tyler, which I'm not necessarily convinced that he won't earn some trust back, but you got to have a third.
Be a part of the game plan.
Yes, for sure.
The question to me is, do you think that he has the same role come Saturday afternoon next week?
I still think they need to get him more involved in the pass game for sure. And we haven't seen that yet.
No. You know, that's Sean Tyler. Again, Darius Taylor has his coming out party, 193 yards and 33 carries. I mean, you saw why he was such a sought-after recruit. You see why he was a four-star. You see why we were talking him up. You see why Michigan and Michigan State were hard after him. Michigan State with a generous NIL hypothetical there. Michigan makes a late run at him, tries to get him to flip. He stays with Minnesota. But I you know, I watched that game, obviously live in the press box, watched it back this morning. I think the thing that has me excited the most is there was still so much more on the bone there for Darius Taylor. He's still able to run for 6 yards a carry, but I'm sure when he watches the tape back here on Sunday or Monday, and what new running back coach Nick McKissick-Luke will be stressing to him is there were more yards out there for him to get. Mm-hmm. Now, for his first opportunity in a Big Ten type of situation, obviously in his first real action in college football after playing three snaps last week, and you're able to see the patience, to me, really stood out. The way he was able to then burst through the holes and then absorb contact and run through contact at times. I mean, it's very exciting to see the Northwest complement that Darius Taylor at least showed us on Saturday night, Luke.
Yeah, I agree. I think you tweeted something to the extent of like, we finally have like a north, south, east, west combo, right? Mm-hmm. And then that's when we saw Sean Tyler with the fumble. I agree. But as we well know, having grown up in the Glenn Mason era, you know, you need that pair and spare, right? So they got to find who that spare is going to be, especially if Bryce Williams is out for them. So, you know, whether that's going to be whoever it's going to be, right? I mean, we can get into the Zach Evans thing now if you want. But I know there's, I don't know if he's in like the proverbial doghouse or he's got to do some things right, you know, on the field and he's struggling in practice or what it is. But that's a common question you've been getting because they were high on him last year.
They were, but I think, you know, the tide has certainly changed for him a little bit. And I'll read the direct quotes from Fleck because he's been asked about this a lot. He was asked on Monday about Zach Evans, and here's what he said, and I quote, "He's doing good, but this is all about competition. I don't make the depth charts. The players make the depth charts. I just pick who's best. Just because you did something 1 year doesn't mean you're going to be there next year. We keep adding talent, and then you got to go out and perform." Okay, that seems pretty direct to me. And then last night he was asked about it again. He goes, you know, we got to get Zach Evans back in the mix, but he's got to earn that.
Sure.
We've also got JoJo, who is Jordan Newbin, in the mix. He's got to earn that. It's not just, oh, you're the next guy, get in there. We're going to earn everything we get on this football team. So before I give my thoughts there, what is your interpretation of PJ Fleck quotes from the last week on Zach Evans?
That to me says one of two things. He's masking something by saying he needs to do something better, or he just isn't performing or is whining. And, you know, there's some whining and complaining, thinking that he should just be given something. It's interesting. I agree with the philosophy that he's touting. It'll be interesting to see, you know, ultimately if and when he gets his chance, if we can make something out of his play, or if it's something outside of the football field. I have no idea if it is, to be honest, but you know, it seems like a convenient way to spin that if you're PJ.
Fleck rarely calls people out individually, and I don't know that I classify it as calling someone out, but I think by Fleck standards, this is certainly worth noting. A lot of talk about earning things. You have to earn that. Just because you were here 1 year doesn't mean you won't. It doesn't mean, you know, you have to go out and perform. So I think Minnesota would love for Zach Evans to earn it, obviously. But until he does, I just have a hard time believing that he's going to get out on the field now.
Mm-hmm.
I also don't think it's a coincidence he mentioned Jordan Newbin, who I know Tyler Newbin's younger brother, a walk-on running back. I wouldn't be shocked that if Evans is not in the mix and Bryce Williams is still out next week against North Carolina, I wouldn't be shocked to see Newbin get in there on some opportunities. But if Sean Tyler is going to fumble the football again next week, I don't know what Minnesota does, because you're essentially just leaning out and say Bryce Williams is out still.
Mm-hmm.
Sean Tyler has another fumble, which would be his fourth in five quarters at that point. Are you really going to lean on the true freshman in his third ever career game? I mean, it's just, there's a lot of things it feels like that are happening with that running back room right now that we don't have a ton of clarity on. There's a lot of if-then statements with it, but I am going to be fascinated to see how this continues to play out. The other thing I think I want to mention offensively is I'm trying to think of how I want to phrase this, because Minnesota does end up throwing the ball 15 times only on the night. And if you look at Ethan's stat line, 10 of 15 for 117 yards and a pick, you'd think, oh, boy, here we go again. I didn't watch the game. I looked at the stat line. There's Fleck. Passing game stinks again. I listened to Ryan Burns all offseason tout this passing game, and here we are. He's a crock of crap.
Yeah.
Trust me, that's what my mentions look like on a daily basis. And so here's what I would pitch to you before I give my thoughts. It felt different in terms of a 10 of 15 night. It felt like they didn't pass the ball because they wanted to work on the run game. It didn't feel like they didn't pass the ball because the passing game was an issue, like it has been the last few seasons, the non-conference. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think that's what's not included and you don't see in the stats is that did they earn two or three PIs? I think two for sure.
Redmond Ford got Minnesota into the red zone twice via pass interference, and then Daniel Jackson also drew one.
Yeah, so there are three. So there were three, and that was that's big yardage. You know, that's 45 yards of penalties, right? So in addition, you could really look at that if you wanted. That's really 18 pass attempts, right? And then effectively kind of like 13 completions, basically 160 yards. Like, that's not bad considering how little they threw it. It's pretty effective. And the interception was
literally in the breadbasket.
Yes.
And then it bounced to a guy. So it's like, you can't put it on Ethan. No. That's on Brevin. And now the question mark is, how healthy is Brevin Spanford going to be going into the North Carolina big game? Because he was down on the field for probably 5 minutes of real time, ended up being in the injury tent for at least 15 minutes after that.
Yeah.
Didn't end up coming out. Fleck said afterwards, he went up to Brevin in the locker room. Brevin said he was fine. Do not take anything PJ Fleck ever says about injuries for granted.
Yeah.
Like, the man is not a reliable narrator of his own football team with injuries, because he chooses not to be. Because he's a paranoid head football coach.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say, from what I've heard here on Sunday thus far, there is optimism that he's going to be able to go next week. So that would obviously be a big lift. But I think the thing Minnesota is also still trying to figure out is, how do they best use Brevin Spanford? Because he's certainly the biggest mismatch they've had at tight end since, I would say, Max Williams in the passing game. And again, you look at his stat line on the night, 2 catches for 5 yards. Yes, it looks a little bit different. He's able to catch those wheel routes that he ended up gathering pass interference on. But that's going to be, if and when Brevin goes next week, Minnesota is going to have to score at least 25, 28 points to be able to compete with number 20 North Carolina. And if that's going to be the case, they're going to have to be throwing the ball. And if they're going to have to be throwing the ball, they're going to have to be generating explosive passing plays. Because that's about the last thing I want to touch on here with the offense, Luke, is I've spent a lot of time talking with a lot of different people in the Gopher football building, I would say, in the last 9 months. And there has been a large emphasis behind the scenes, both in practice, in game planning, in the way they draw things up to try and become more explosive in terms of in their passing offense, because they feel like with Corey Crooms, Daniel Jackson, Brevin Spanford, Lemeke Brockington, Elijah Spencer, that they can generate these explosive plays. The issue is, Luke, I don't know that Minnesota's got a reception of longer than, say, 22, 25 yards on the season. Now, again, 2-game sample size, just about 16% of your season. I'm trying not to overreact too much, but that's the number one thing I want to see from the passing game next week against a North Carolina team that gave up nearly 500 yards of total offense and 34 points to App State at home on Saturday is we need to see more explosive passing plays, because Ethan's obviously got the arm to place the ball far down the field from the near sideline to the far hash, whatever it may be. I think Greg Harbaugh's got to figure it out here against North Carolina, because if Minnesota's going to stay in that game, they're going to have to be more explosive on offense.
Yeah, I'd agree that they have to be more explosive. And right now it seems like they're finding success, you know, more laterally, right? In stretching the field, you know, horizontally rather than vertically. You know, that's Corey Crooms, Daniel Jackson, you know, even Lamecki Brockington, who all had receptions in this game. But I'm still encouraged with the talent they have in the wide receiver room. The big question for me, Ryan, is we haven't seen a lot of Elijah Spencer yet. And I'm with you. We haven't found that vertical passing threat yet. You know, how do we get Elijah Spencer to play a bigger role?
Well, shoot, they didn't even attempt a 20-yard plus pass.
No, exactly. All of this was run after catch that got them, you know, because Jackson and Crooms both had 22-yard receptions. But a lot of these have been, in a lot of times when you have more horizontal routes, it's more likely that you're tackled more immediately because there's someone there, whether they're playing zone or man. But in these situations, we have to find some more vertical threats. And I think that could be Brevin if they stop splitting him out wide so often, and, you know, run him more up the seam, et cetera. But yeah, they got to find a way to get a little bit more vertical for sure.
Is there anything else on offense you want to touch on here? I think the only other thing I would say is going back to the initial point with the offensive line, Minnesota did a much better job at running into plus one boxes.
Yeah.
On Saturday night. So plus one box, again, for those of you new, say there's eight Eastern Michigan defenders near the line of scrimmage, and Minnesota's got their offensive line and two tight ends there. So Minnesota's got seven blockers against eight defenders. So if you do the math, Eastern Michigan is plus one in the box. Essentially, you're accounting for your running back being able to make someone miss, or you're able to kind of work a double team to the second level, whatever that may be. And it felt like, at least in my eyes, Minnesota was much more successful running into a plus one box. Now, I don't know if it was just the scheme, it was Eastern Michigan, whether it was Minnesota's offensive line imposing their will, but I did want to get that final note in there.
Yeah. I think the only other thing I'd like to add is in my concern for this season, and it carries over from the Nebraska game, is they got to find ways to be effective on early downs. I thought they did a better job of it this week. They're adamant in terms of running the ball, but I want to see them to be a little bit more unpredictable, but also have success on early downs. Not finding themselves in long, you know, third down situations, because we saw that they struggled with that against Nebraska. But I don't want it to be predictable that, okay, it's first down, we're going to run inside zone. It's first down, we're going to run inside zone. I liked the unpredictability of game one, but then again, you know, then they just threw the ball around the yard. I want to see a good blend on those first and second downs, get themselves into an advantageous, you know, third and three, you know, if they have to, third and three, you know, third and four situation, right?
The thing I would note about third down specifically is I'll remind people in game one, Minnesota had 17 different third downs against Nebraska. Their average distance on those 17 third downs was 7.8 yards, which is horrendous. It means you were incredibly inefficient on early downs, so everything was third and long. Well, Luke, Minnesota had 13 third downs on Yes. Saturday night against Eastern Michigan. Can you guess the average distance to go on those 13 third downs?
My guess is going to be 4 yards. It was better.
4.4 yards per carry.
So
4.4 yards.
Yeah, and so I thought that was better. I'm not trying to say that this game was a bad example. It just felt like in our sample size that we have right now, in Nebraska we were throwing the ball. In this game we were running the ball. I want to have some balance there. I want to be a little bit more unpredictable, but also be effective on those early downs and continue what we saw against Eastern Michigan, to not put yourself in a position where you have to have, you know, where you're behind the sticks. All right, Ryan, I know you have earbuds. I think you have Beats something or another. I have Apple AirPods. And there are tons of different earbuds out there. And frankly, I've been really pleased with the Comply ear tips that we've been using. And frankly, Ryan, they are just more comfortable. The silicone tips, they're just rigid and they're not very good at, you know, forming to my ear, but I get better noise isolation, etc. And they're just really comfortable in how they fit to my ear canal. And it's just a wonderful experience thus far.
I will tell all of our listeners once again, these were life-changing for me as an earbud user, because the silicone tips that come with my Beats Pros or Luke's Apple AirPods, they caused ear pain for me, fatigue. My ears always hurt. They never stayed in. But the memory foam ones from the local company here in Oakdale, Minnesota, Comply Foam and ComplyFoam.com, they eliminate the ear pain, the fatigue. They allow you to listen longer. If you're out working out, whatever it may be, the silicone tips lack the grip in your ear to stay in there, especially when you sweat. Well, these memory foam ones create a grip, much better seal, and they keep the earbuds where they need to be. I will continue to stress this point home. These have really changed the way that I'm able to wear my Beat Pros. We've all invested in nice earbuds, and you need to make sure that those tips on top of those buds are doing the same for you. So for our listeners, you can go to complyfoam.com, look through the brands, find your specific earbuds, and use the promo code GG, as in go for gridiron, GG23 at checkout, and get 20% off your order. So Luke, I encourage people to go to complyfoam.com, find the right tips for you, and then use the promo code GG23 at checkout today.
All right, let's talk about the Gopher defense, Ryan. Once again, in the Joe Rossi era, they are the highlight of this team. They hold Eastern Michigan to 6 points. Yes, 6 points. I don't know. Just this whole score just feels odd that it's 25-6 to me. I'm not really sure why.
Very Skornami-esque. I hope Carl Anderson, one of the beautiful SIDs for Gopher football, is listening to this. He normally is huge into the Skornami. I got to imagine 25-6 is one of the most unique scores the Gophers have had in a long time.
Very unique. But in general, you know, early in the game, Eastern Michigan was finding some running room, and you know, their running back Evans, you know, ended up with 11 carries, 73 yards. That was basically all in the first half. Then they even were able to get one over the top with play action. But ultimately, Ryan, there was nothing to be found in the second half for Eastern Michigan. Whatever adjustments the Gophers made seemed to work. Just a phenomenal, phenomenal second half and another phenomenal showing. Once again, I got some shade on Twitter for my early preseason predictions that the Gophers would have given up so many points. I will say that, you know, everybody might need kind of an enemy. And if I have to be Joe Rossi's enemy and we get these results, I am happy to stand up and throw shade his way to get these results, because it's been phenomenal.
Eastern Michigan scores 6 points in the night, and in the second half, they had 4 total yards. 4.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I mean, the Gopher defense was on the field for 14 plays in the second half, because all they did was force 4 third downs and get off the field and then had a turnover. Like, it was truly remarkable to see the second half adjustments there, because there were some issues in the second quarter with Minnesota being able to get off the field, which we can get into when we talk about linebacker. To me, is where the issues lied. But I want to start with, this was the Kyler Ball game.
No kidding.
He was sensational. That's the best game that Kyler Ball has played in a Gopher uniform. And he was, from the opening drive until the final play of the game, where he's able to WWE the quarterback to the ground there. Number 93 was consistently creating interior penetration, I should say. I mean, that's something that we had been stressing since Niles Pinckney was here back in 2021. That's the thing that has been missing most from how does Minnesota become a better pass rushing team? Well, if you can generate an interior pass rush and you can get push into the backfield, the quarterback's not going to have anywhere to step up into, which allows Danny Strigow, Jod Joyner, Jalen Logan Redding, Anthony Smith, more of a gray area to be able to get home on the quarterback. But the way he was able to wreak havoc all game. Now, you look at the stats, he only's got 2 sacks. Well, he should have had 4 in my mind, because he had another sack on 3rd down way deep that was called on an Aiden Goosby holding call, so that was nullified. He also hit the quarterback's arm as the ball was moving forward. That was reviewed for a potential fumble. Instead, it's an incomplete pass. But the way he was just able to consistently get into the backfield, I think, is certainly worth noting. And I would also say Devin Eastern flashed to me. I mean, he was right alongside there. Now, Eastern Michigan, a MAC offensive line, I don't know how good they will be, but to me, that's where I want to start is, Luke, the defensive tackles for Minnesota showed up in this game, and it never really allowed Austin Smith to really get too comfortable back there.
Yeah, I mean, all in all, we talked all last season, you know, this defensive line was unable to get pressure, and really even towards the end of the season, Jod Joyner was really the only one kind of getting consistent pressure. Danny Strigoff flashed before his injury at times, but maybe wasn't consistent. But man, it is so hard as a quarterback to find success, and even in the running game, when with the interior you're able to get pressure, and with what Kyler Ball was able to show in this game with the three sacks and, you know, the number of hurries and, you know, getting the hand on the quarterback as he was throwing, kind of forcing an errant incompletion. You know, that's the kind of thing that I'm not sure I was anticipating. I was hopeful, right? We knew that Devin Eastern was going to be good, but when you lose someone like Trill Carter, who had a lot of experience, I don't think that anyone anticipated it could be this good, Ryan.
No. And you look at the stats on the year, they already got 7 sacks through 2 games. Now, again, I don't know how much of a litmus test both of these teams will end up being, especially how inept Nebraska's offense continues to look. Eastern Michigan's quarterback certainly, I don't think, does them much help at times. But this is what you wanted to see. I mean, I understand the competition is not great, and it's going to take a step up when you play North Carolina this upcoming weekend. But that's going to be arguably the biggest key to how does Minnesota try and contain the potential number one overall pick in the 2024 NFL draft and Drake May. Get pressure on a college quarterback, and I don't care who they are, they're going to be more errant, and they're going to be making, I would say, more poor decisions, and if they're kept clean, especially someone like Drake May. But, I mean, you saw Minnesota get home. I mean, you saw Minnesota really do well, I think, what Rossi showed in that second half and why Minnesota was able to get home a few different times, especially that Trey Jones blitz is where he was able to get home for that sack. That's one thing that Daniel House and I have talked about a lot in the offseason, and it's something to where it's called a simulated pressure. That's one of the Joe Rossi's trademarks. And so what that means, and I'll do my best to put on my Derek Burns hat here, is if you go back and watch that play, whether in my GIF rewind on Gopher Illustrated or you're going back and watching back through the game here in the next day or two, you'll get to that third down, and you'll see that Minnesota shows 5 people at the line of scrimmage. I think they have 4 down linemen and Ryan Selig standing in the A-gap right on top of the center. Well, what Minnesota does is obviously you're trying to simulate what is eventually going to be coming at you. You're trying to give the offensive line, you know, get their head spinning a little bit. Same with the quarterback. Minnesota only ends up rushing 3 of those 5 as Danny Strigow and Ryan Selig go back into coverage. But what they don't see, and why this play is why it was so effective, is Jod Joyner ends up cutting inside the left tackle, which takes the eyes of the play side running back, who's like, oh, Jod is about to get to the quarterback. I'm going to have to cheat inside. Well, off the backside comes Trayvon Jones from his corner spot untouched, because Joyner cuts inside to draw the attention of the left tackle and the running back. The running back gets his eyes around too late, and then Trayvon Jones is able to get home for the sack. So that's one of the things that Rossi loves to do, is show a lot of guys, don't bring them all, but you don't know which guys he's going to bring, which obviously causes a lot of headaches.
Yeah, it's difficult from a protection standpoint, because you have to call a protection based on what you're trying to see, right? Pre-snap, but then post-snap, if you don't know, your protection might not be well aligned to, you know, what you're seeing, and you might put yourself in a disadvantage. Ultimately, that Trayvon Jones play is an incredible example of the simulated pressure, but also I think the more important thing is he was able to finish the play, right? He was able to finish it with a sack. The improved pressure has been great. Really interested to see how they continue to do against pressure, because or how they do generating pressure, because as you noted, Nebraska's offensive line has struggled. It's also a struggle because Jeff Sims has been so putrid. But additionally, you know, I'm not sure how good Eastern Michigan's offensive line really is. So I'm curious to see how they do against North Carolina, a team that's obviously built to throw the ball, with a phenomenal quarterback who should be really good at getting the ball out quickly. I'm very curious to see, you know, how that comes together and, you know, just to see if it can carry over it. But we have to admit, Ryan, that we have seen more pressure, and Winston Dilaudy-Boudaire deserves some credit, you know, with this improvement.
Yeah, I think it's a culmination of Winston's techniques and Brick Haley being gone, and so many guys taking that step from year one in the Big Ten,
yeah,
playing
for sure,
to year two. I mean, you got Danny Strigo, Ja Joyner, Jalen Logan Redding, Kyler Baugh, Logan Richter, all now in year two of playing, plus you're breaking in Devin Eastern and Anthony Smith, who obviously have immense potential. And it helps to have the bodies that they do, but I do think Winston has also elevated this defensive line to maybe hitting closer to what their potential may be. Because you look at through the 2 weeks of the season, I believe you're at either 9 or 10 tackles for loss and 7 sacks. I would have killed for a Minnesota team to do that in any point of any stretch last season in 2 games. I mean, think about this game last year, and what I mean by that is game 2. Minnesota couldn't generate any pressure on Western Illinois, who is an absolutely downright dreadful FCS program. And I think that was probably the moment where Joe Rossi went back and watched the tape and was like, we're not going to be able to rush the passer this season, so I'm going to have to change what I do schematically at points. Well, I would imagine now Rossi, through 2 games of this season, is now through the second game, watch for the second consecutive day on game day where Minnesota is able to get consistent pressure. And the nice part is, Luke, in game 1, it was the edge players, the Strigaus, the Joiners, the Jalen Logan Reddings of the world. This week, it was the interior guys. Now, obviously, you want them to all be working in harmony, but that's the exciting part to me about this pass rush going forward is, 1 week it was the outside, the next week it was the inside. Now, you want them to continue to complement one another, because that ultimately means more cohesive defense, but that's the exciting part to me.
Yeah, no question. Another exciting thing is the Gophers continue to have forced turnovers. You know, Devin Williams is able to get his first interception with the Gophers, and a nice, actually, 19-yard return on that. And I recognize in this game, Austin Smith probably wasn't the best quarterback, finished 9 of 20, right, with the pick. And they weren't exactly taking a lot of deep shots outside of the play action. They were able to get over the top.
Guy was wide open.
Yes. Yeah. And you know, they had been running the ball effectively. I mean, that's, you know, the value prop of play action, right? Is if you're running the ball successfully, people are going to cheat, and they caught the Gophers, and it was a good play there. All in all, the secondary was pretty good, right? But I was really encouraged that they're able to force another interception and continue, you know, that turnover margin in their advantage, because it ended up being, well, I should say, the Gophers ended up being -1 in this game. But, you know, they're able at least to force one themselves after forcing 4 over Nebraska. It was just a positive to see another forced turnover.
The stretch I want to highlight here is the second quarter stretch for the defense, because if you're going to harp on them for something, it was being on the field for 21 snaps. And you allowed some third down conversions, a 9-play drive and a 12-play drive that ended in field goals. To me, the linebackers looked a little out of sorts at times, where maybe Ryan Selig and Maverick Baranowski were going to the same gap, or there was a 3rd and 9, I believe, and Austin Smith ends up scrambling for a first down. And that play bugged the crap out of me, because it was Ryan Selig that was the responsibility there. And what he did is he committed the cardinal sin on defense, Luke, and he stopped his feet. And because he's able to stop his feet, Austin Smith's able to turn the corner and get the first down there. If Ryan Selig just continues to chop his feet, keep his feet moving, keep moving in a momentum one way or another, he's able to eventually cut off Smith short of the line of gain. It's going to be like 4th and 5 from the 40, and maybe more points come off the board there. Maybe you're able to give your offense the ball with plus field position. But to me, for those thinking, well, what happened in that second quarter? I just think there were too many people trying to do too many things. I think their head maybe wasn't in the right place. That's one of the things Fleck highlighted afterwards, was he called them scatterbrained in his verbatim there.
That's fair.
They were just trying to do, I think, too many things. And then you saw them come out in the second half. Again, I don't want to, you know, dismantle a defense that allowed four total yards in the second half. I mean, like, what are we doing here?
Right.
This is a defense now that for the, I think, eighth consecutive game has allowed 20 or more or less points. Excuse me. So it's, that streak is obviously going to be put to the test next week with all the playmakers that North Carolina has. But the linebackers, to me, found it a little bit in the second half. We'll see how Maverick Baranowski is. Someone who led the team in tackles, had a nice coverage sack coming up and putting the hit on Austin Smith there. But second consecutive game without Cody Lindenberg, and more or less, I would say seven of the eight quarters, Joe Rossi's linebacking core has performed well. Now, I would say there is an exuberant amount of optimism that Cody Lindenberg is going to be back for this North Carolina game. That would be a giant boost, considering he is arguably a top three player on this defense with Tyler Newbin and Justin Wally, and he's their best linebacker. So, I mean, I thought linebacker was fine on the back end. I think you saw Darius Green flash a little bit more from his strong safety position. He was able to come up with a tackle for loss. You're able to see that speed and physicality, I think, in the run game a little bit more. Trayvon Jones struggled at times in coverage. It was clear that they wanted nothing to do with Justin Wally.
Yes.
I believe they only threw at him one time, and that was near the student section end zone, and he deflected the pass away. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be something to watch moving forward. Is Justin Wally just going to get the Jalen Ramsey treatment of sorts, and no one's going to go at him? Because if that's going to be the case, Trayvon Jones better be ready.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think the only thing I'm going to highlight, And this is really a nitpick, and you said it earlier, Ryan, they're just struggling to get off the field on third downs at times, right? It was a lot better, obviously, in the second half. You know, they had an incredibly low conversion rate last year. Their opponents had an incredibly low conversion rate on third down last year. I think it was something like 27% or something. I should look that up real quick. Yeah, it was 27.88%. Here on this season, their opponents are at 38.1%, which is more towards the like national average. But you know, this is something that we haven't seen from a Joe Rossi defense since, you know, last year may have been an anomaly, but you know, you really want to get people off on third down and just shorten the game, give the ball back to your offense, et cetera. So in general, I don't want to nitpick too much. And I wanted to also just highlight one play I thought was really good from Maverick Baranowski was the one where he ended up, you know, dropping into coverage, recognizing and then running up quickly on the quarterback and making a play. You know, that highlighted to me, you know, he is playing fast, as Derek often talks about. You know, he makes a decision and just executes. I can live with fast execution on occasionally poor decision making. In that specific play, he made a really good decision and was able to play fast. I'm curious to see. I think he might have a really high ceiling. Ryan, if you're looking for a new insurance agent, maybe you're looking just for a change or just to see what's out there, and maybe you want one that's a Gopher fan. Maybe you also want one that's here in the Twin Cities if you happen to live in the Twin Cities, but you know what? You don't have to have your insurance agent live in the Twin Cities. You could be in a different state as well. They should probably look to Burns Insurance, shouldn't they, Ryan?
I think they should, because my father has a very good history of saving people a lot of money. So whether you are looking for a new insurance agent for your boat, your ATV, your home, your auto, whatever it may be, and you're thinking to yourself, as Luke mentioned, well, Ryan, I don't live in Minnesota. Well, guess what? He's also licensed in North Dakota, South Dakota, Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan, New York, Florida, and Utah. So he is a gigantic Gopher football fan who is an independent insurance agent, someone that is just going to go for the best coverage at the best price for you all the time. It's great savings, great coverages, and above all else, great service. So if you're thinking to yourself, I'm paying too much for my insurance, for whatever it may be, shoot him an email at bill@insurancebyburns.com or check them out online at insurancebyburns.com.
Ryan, again, home field is partnered with us for the 2023 season. If you are looking for retro apparel of officially licensed Gopher gear, or frankly, any almost college gear, there you have tons of licenses available. Go to homefieldapparel.com. Ryan, this is some of the most comfortable clothing you'll find on the market.
It's unique. It's stuff that your spouse will steal and you'll have to fight for it to be able to wear it, number one, to bed, number two, out and about. But looking at the designs that they have on homefieldapparel.com under the Minnesota section, they got unique vintage stuff for Gopher basketball, Gopher hoops, Gopher football, and whatever it may be that you're looking for and you want to have something unique to wear to your next Gopher event, go to homefieldapparel.com. Use the promo code GG23 at checkout, giving yourself 15% off your first order. And then you get to go to the event, and everybody looks at you and says, that is so cool. Where did you get that? Then they touch the shirt. They touch the sweatpants. They touch the sweater. Whatever it may be, and they're like, wow, this is comfortable. And you're like, yep, I listen to the guys on the Gopher Gridiron Radio podcast. So what you got to do, go to homefieldapparel.com. Find whatever you would like to buy, and then at checkout, use the promo code GG23. 15% off your first order.
All right, let's talk a little bit about Gopher special teams, Ryan, before we transition into Big Ten talk. Block punt, my man.
It happened! Yay!
Yeah, so almost a touchdown. You know, and just basically
Joey Gerlach, if he had a toe out foot instead of 13, gets that. But kudos to Rob Wenger. This is it. This is the moment many of you have been waiting for. I bet you I got 50 tweets. The moment after that happened, Justin Gard got all the people going on the Twitter machine. But the funny part there is if you're able to watch the All-22 of it, again, on my GIF rewind on Gopher Illustrated, for those who want to watch the game back but don't have the time to, I gift all the important plays, explain them, why they went the way that they did. It takes you 5 minutes to read through, plus you get to watch the GIF over and over. But, Luke, if the punter takes a step to the left, Lamecki Brockington catches the ball before he's able to punt it.
Yeah.
Like, if the punter would have put that up in the air, Lamecki grabs it and runs in for a touchdown. He takes a step to the right. Chan Hassan's own, the walk-on linebacker, Eli Mao, gets, I believe, his right hand on the football. Joey Gerlach makes a very Larkin dance-esque try to be nimble with his feet there in the end zone to keep him in, gets his foot on the line. It's a safety. But look at that, Luke. Their second blocked punt. In the PJ Fleck era, can you name
yes.
the other blocked punt?
Yes, I can. It was the opening game of the 2020 season against Michigan.
You are an elite football
Thank
mind.
You.
Now, if you want to take it to the next level and really get me excited here on a Sunday evening, who was the walk-on that blocked it?
I'm going to go with Derek LeCaptain. It's just a guess, though.
Preston Jelen is Preston the answer Jelen. We were looking
Dang it.
For. Preston Jelen is the one who blocked the punt against Michigan in 2020. So another walk-on, another local kid is able to get a hand on the football. I am proud of Rob Wenger's unit for being able to execute there. I'd love to continue to see it. Dragan Kesic, you know, you and I talked on the preview episode about Eastern Michigan having a prolific return game.
Yeah.
They had two return touchdowns in the opener. They had another return touchdown in their last season of play in 2022. So what does Minnesota do to mitigate that? Dragan Kesic boots it out of the end zone or 5 yards deep every single time. Smart decision. Plus, it helps when you don't punt the entire game that they don't have a chance to do that. So that's the good for the Gopher special teams. And before I get to where I want to nitpick, Luke, I will say at – I've talked about on this podcast all the time, the one question I ask myself about Gopher special teams at the end of the day, did they help the team or did they hurt the team today compared to the other special teams? Minnesota helped themselves more than Eastern Michigan's did on special teams. And that's worth applauding. Certainly, Luke.
Yeah. I got to highlight too. It was nice to see them get a positive kind of explosive play in special teams, blocking that punt. But Ryan, I'm probably with you, and it's, I think, a good segue in the return game, whether it be punt or particularly kickoff, has been a little bit of a head scratcher. It's got to be better.
First thing I would say is I hope Quentin Redding's all right. I think he has gotten a bad rap here because of small sample sizes. I think people forget he was a third team all Big Ten guy last season. But on his first kickoff return, he takes it out and he gets obliterated and he doesn't return. I believe I saw him on the sidelines then with his right arm in a sling or a wrap or something like that. So I hope he's okay. The issue is he brought it, I believe, to the 14 before being tackled. That's already 11 yards of field position that the offense has lost. To compound on that, Minnesota had a hold and a block in the back just to make it all fine and dandy. So if you're keeping score at home, in game number one, kickoff return lost 18 yards of field position for the Gopher offense. In game number two, let's go kick return by kick return here. And I'm not going to count Daniel Jackson's because that was a weird safety punt kickoff type of situation, which isn't real life. So you have Sean Tyler, who then goes back to return the kicks. He brings Minnesota, I believe, to the 25-yard line. So it's a net nothing. And then Quentin Redding's, because of penalties, Minnesota started at their own 7. So kick return for the second consecutive game loses their offense 18 yards of field position again. So on the season through 2 games, kick return has lost the offense 36 yards of field position, which is truly remarkable, Luke.
Yeah, it's a bit of a head scratcher.
Fair catch everything. I mean, here's what I would say. Give it one more game, and you're through 25% of the season at that point. If it continues to be an unmitigated disaster, more or less, just fair catch everything for the remaining 9 games and stop screwing over your offense.
Yeah, and I think that ultimately is where we, you know, when we chatted last year, we were frustrated that they were just fair catching it. But yeah, I'm with you. We haven't seen enough at this point.
They're trying, which I appreciate that Rob Wenger is trying, and PJ Fleck is allowing him to try. There's nothing wrong with trying in a game like Eastern Michigan to return kicks. Where the issue comes up is next week when you're going to be a 5-6 point underdog against North Carolina, field possession is absolutely going to matter, especially in a game where you're the underdog. So if Quentin Redding can't go, the other thing I would note is, other than Zach Evans, the number of tweets I get is, where's Kristen Hoskins? Where's Kristen Hoskins? Where's Kristen Hoskins? Well, the strange part of that game was once Q Redding got injured and he wasn't able to go, on one of the punts, Luke, Minnesota actually had Kristen Hoskins back there. But then there was like a penalty, I believe, and then Matt Simon runs over and he yanks off Hoskins, puts on Corey Crooms, who ends up catching the 2 punts on the night. For those who don't know, I believe the way it goes is Rob Wenger doesn't have control over that, or he's, I guess, delegated it. Matt Simon, I believe, for the entire tenure of Fleck, has been the guy that works with the returners. Now, I don't completely understand why the receiver coach / co-offensive coordinator is that guy and not the guy whose sole purpose on the staff is to work on special teams. But for those of you with disdain for those decisions, Kristen Hoskins almost got on the field, but Simon yanked him for Corey Crooms to get back there.
So, okay, well, that explains, because I saw Hoskins on defense, but yeah, that explains why we saw Corey Crooms.
Hoskins on
defense. On punt return in that one. He was on punt return. That explains that.
It's a strange situation. I don't know the full scope of it yet. I'll try and dig into it and talk about it on Gopher Illustrated this week, which, if you haven't already and you love listening to these dulcet tones, boy, do you think my finger strokes might even be a little bit better on that keyboard.
Yeah.
It's 30 days for $1. Come hang out with us. We got a great community there.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the Big Ten kind of in general too, Ryan. Let me see, 14 games. So we'll go quickly through these. Indiana gets a win 41-7 against in-state rival Indiana State. Not much of a game here. I think most people are probably surprised that Indiana was able to amass 41 points, but you know, playing an FCS school, not a lot there.
Absolutely dreadful.
They're dreadful. And I do want to note though, we have a bet riding on this. So Tom Allen looks to be safe through Halloween for me now.
Look at that. He didn't lose to a team who lost their first game to Eastern Illinois by 27 points and got shut out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Indiana State scores against Indiana, but not Eastern Illinois is my takeaway there. I mean, yes, great for Indiana. You beat an absolutely horrible team. Jalen Lucas is actually a really fun player to watch for them. Certainly someone that very explosive with the ball in his hands. But Tom Allen, the schedule is going to get a little bit more difficult now, especially when guess who comes into town next week that we get to preview here?
Oh,
next on the preview episode.
I don't even know. I'm going to have to look this
up.
Your
guy, Jeff Brohm, comes in.
Oh, man.
11 a.m. contest. Louisville versus Indiana.
Ooh, that'll be a fun one. Then they got Akron. Okay, that it's going to get interesting for sure. The other Friday night game featured Illinois falling for the first time against the Jayhawks of Kansas, 34-23. This is a game that I got to watch a good amount of. I know you did as well. Yeah, and I'll say this. The Jayhawks got out very fast, scoring 28 points in the first half, only amassing six, which they got in the third quarter, not scoring in the fourth. Illinois just couldn't get it going. But I will say, man alive, Daniels for Kansas.
Jalen Daniels is special.
He's special. And
Kansas quarterback.
Yes.
In his first game of the year, because he didn't play last week. Yeah, I think he was the Big 12 preseason offensive player of the year. You saw why.
Yes.
He is dynamic in terms of with his legs. He's dynamic in extending plays. He's very accurate when he releases the ball. I mean, I would also say just the Kansas offensive staff is tremendous. They kept Illinois off balance the entire game. Jalen Daniels, though, a.k.a. Seneca Wallace 2.0, one of your favorite Seattle Seahawk quarterbacks, I should say.
Yeah, there you go.
That's my comp for Jalen Daniels, even though I'm not an NFL draft guy. But the thing to me that stood out about Illinois, and you noted it in our group chat with Derek Burns, was Illinois. I don't know if it was Illinois thinking too much, but the takeaway I have from watching them both against Toledo and now Kansas is their team speed is a lot different without three bona fide studs in the secondary.
Yeah.
Without Chase Brown. They are figuring out a lot about their team still. I would also say the Illinois defensive line got a lot of hubbub, including from myself coming into the year. And I think Johnny Newton proved that against Kansas at times. But this front seven for Illinois has not been what anybody would have expected. Well, I saw quotes from Brett Bielema after the game being like, we got to figure some things out. We got to figure out what we do well, yada, yada.
Yeah.
But I mean, he's right, because this Illinois team, now 1-1, they certainly could have lost if not for a great throw from Luke Altmaier in the waning seconds. But guess what? Next week, you get to come back home and take on Penn State, who is on an absolute heater.
Yeah.
So it just doesn't get any easier for Illinois right now.
Well, in addition to the team speed piece, they're really struggling to run the ball, Ryan. 28 carries for 139 yards.
Reggie Love, their two starting tailbacks, 12 carries for 65 yards.
Yeah.
Now, I believe that's over 5 yards a carry.
Yes.
But they're so different. I mean, again, Chase Brown was an NFL draft pick. Chase Brown mm-hmm. was sensational. Great speed, great after contact guy. But it's clear that I think Illinois is going through some of what Minnesota is in their own tailback room.
Mm-hmm.
What is Reggie Love? What is Josh McCray? What is Caden Feegan, someone that they, a true freshman for them, they're trying to feature? I think they're in a very similar spot to Minnesota, I think, offensively right now, where they're trying to figure out who are the guys we can trust in early downs, passing downs, red zone, short yardage. And that's obviously not helping out the overall team.
Yeah. Yeah, turnovers, you know, they ended up being even in this game, but Illinois was only 4 of 10 on third down, 1 of 2 on fourth down. They just weren't particularly efficient. When your quarterback leads you in rushing, you know, both with, I think he even led them in carries. I should check that. Yeah, he did. He led them in carries, Altmaier, with 13 carries for 70 yards. I don't know. They just they're trying to find an identity, I think, is the best summation that I've heard thus far. I didn't hear Bielema's comments, but that's interesting.
The only other thing I want to note about this game before we move on, Illinois leads the entire Big Ten, if not the country, in trash talking on defense.
Yes.
They are one of the most confident teams in their abilities, because after every play, I mean, they were down to start the second half 28-7. And I remember watching that opening drive of the third quarter for Kansas, and they're down 3 touchdowns and they're out there jawing. And I'm thinking to myself, look, you play the way you want to play, but my goodness, does that team, when you saw some, I believe some penalties were an issue again for Illinois. Some of that was jawing after the whistle. They are a very confident group, and they're not afraid to let you know about that.
All right, so UNLV traveled to number 2 Michigan. Michigan won 35-7. Ultimately, I don't think anybody is surprised that Blake Corum went, 15 carries, 80 yards, and 3 touchdowns in this game. I don't know how much he ended up playing in terms of number of minutes. Not a ton of carries, but the 3 touchdowns obviously pops there. But again, Michigan, 492 yards of total offense. They threw the ball, particularly well, 23 of 28 for 319 yards. McCarthy had a great game as well. Man, they look like they're humming.
J.J. McCarthy has 7 incompletions through 2 games. Now, they have played the Little Sisters of the Poor in UNLV and ECU at home to start the year. I'm not here to tell you they face great competition, and I think they have another horrible team coming up this weekend. But J.J. McCarthy, through 2 games, has 87% completion percentage for over 10 yards per completion, and he's got 5 touchdowns and no picks. If J.J. McCarthy plays like this for the next 14 games, and I say 14 knowing full well what I'm saying, if not 15 games, Michigan's going to win a national title, because that offense, with Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards, you're going to have to sell out to stop the run. And if J.J. McCarthy is going to play like this against Penn State, against Michigan, whoever it may be, sweet Moses of Mary. It's going to be very interesting to watch that team come to town here in early October is what I'll say.
All right. So Youngstown State traveled to Ohio State. Ohio State wins 35-7. Kyle McCord, 14 of 20, 258 yards, 3 touchdowns on the day. Travion Henderson, 5 carries, 56 yards, 11.2 and 2 touchdowns. The score maybe isn't nearly as lopsided as one thought. It was an under on the 56, and Youngstown State also covered the 45.5. But I'm sure that Ohio State found a way to complain about a 35-7 victory. They're one of the only fan bases that seemingly can. They did go to quarterbacks again with Devin Brown and Kyle McCord. McCord statistically played quite a bit better. Interested to see how they're going to handle this situation, if they're going to continue playing both, or if they're going to basically be like, this is the Kyle McCord show, everybody buckle up.
That's a great question. All I know is Ohio State continues to lead the country in unhappy fans.
Yes.
After they have won their first 2 games by 20 points and 28 points. Now it's going to get a little bit more difficult for them in 2 weeks when they got to travel to Notre Dame. But, they face Western Kentucky coming up here. So they got one more game to figure some things out before the schedule gets a little bit more difficult.
All right. And then Delaware visited Penn State, where Penn State rolled 63-7. Our guy Trey Potts got 7 carries for 59 yards, 8.4 yard average. Drew Aller, the quarterback, the highly touted quarterback, was 22 of 26, 204 yards and a touchdown. In the end, this wasn't much of a ball game with the FCS opponent.
They ran for 300 yards.
Yeah.
They threw for 200. Drew Aller continues to look really good through 2 games. He's completing 78% of his passes, 4 touchdowns, no picks. If Drew Aller continues to play like this, Penn State can put themselves in that upper tier to me in the Big Ten, where Michigan lies. I'm a little skeptical that's where Ohio State's 2023 team lies. But Penn State obviously needs to get over that hump against one of those two teams, mm-hmm. if they're going to become the Big Ten threat that they think they're going to be. And they're going to get tested a little bit coming up here against Illinois, but certainly in 2 weeks when Phil Parker's defense comes to Happy Valley.
All right. So the number 19 Wisconsin Badgers traveled to Washington State in Pullman to play the Cougars, and they ended up losing, getting down, you know, quite big, Ryan, as well, losing 31-22. You know, Mordecai was 25 of 40 for 278 yards and a touchdown. Ultimately, though, I think that the tail of the tape here is that Wisconsin only amassed 90 yards rushing on 29 carries. Braylon Allen, 7 carries for 20 yards. Ches Malusi, 12 for 49. I mean, part of it was the game script, but in the end, it was Washington State that now swept the home-and-home series and has won both games against Wisconsin.
So you mean to tell me that Wisconsin's not a college football playoff contender?
Yeah, did you see? I think I sent you that like message board comment that got highlighted by that Twitter account that was basically like this Wisconsin Badger message board warrior with something to the extent of, I don't see a loss in the schedule. Let's go. And yeah, nope, second game. We got a loss.
This is me stating for the fourth straight year why stop. The amount of love that Wisconsin gets year over year, their win total should have been 7.5.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what it should have been. It's year one of Luke Fickell, mm-hmm. and expectations are, I think, were too high. I mean, again, everyone was anointing them after the last game where Malusi and Braylon Allen went wild, and then they combined for 19 carries for 69 yards against Washington State.
And three fumbles, right? Like, if we got a fumbling problem, they got 3 fumbles and 3 lost. So,
yeah, Mordecai lost 2. Ches Malusi lost 1. That if you have 3 lost fumbles in a game, it's going to be very tough to win. You know, I think Mordecai recovered, especially in that second half. They made it close. But Wisconsin's a good football team. Mm-hmm. I will state that. They're not a great football team.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I think they're in the same tier like everyone else is, essentially, in the West, of the Minnesota, Wisconsins, the Iowas, and I don't know that I would include the Illinois of the world right now just from what I've seen. I think Iowa's clearly in a tier by themselves just because Phil Parker's defense is Phil Parker's defense. But it's just, again, it's tough to go on the road against a Power 5 opponent and win. And Washington State is a good football team.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it before the season. I told you all before the season. The Wisconsin 10-win, 11-win scenario to me was always wild. I feel like they get overhyped. And it's not to the fault of the fan base to me. The national prognosticators go goo-goo gaga over that team for now 4 consecutive seasons. And I think it's going to be 4 consecutive seasons of them as the West favorite and them not having the West title.
All right. So I think this is the big noon Saturday game. Colorado wins 36-14 over Nebraska. You might see that score and think to yourself, well, this was a blowout from beginning to end. In the first half, it was a really tight, contested ball game. Colorado scored 13 points in the third quarter, and all of those were basically gifts from Nebraska. They didn't have a drive over 6 plays in the second quarter, and they scored all 13 in the second quarter, most of them off of turnovers as well.
Sims is an issue.
Yeah, it was just an atrocious day. I mean, I sent this in our group text, like, really? I don't know that you really wanted to get rid of Casey Thompson, but that was the choice. They went with Jeff Sims, and through 2 games, the man has 8 turnovers, Ryan. It's killing him.
They screwed up the transfer quarterback situation. They could have had many different transfer quarterbacks. They went with Jeff Sims, and Jeff Sims can't stop turning the ball over, and they're dumb turnovers. I mean, they're bobbled snaps. They're missed handoffs. I think he lost 2 snaps that were perfect shotgun snaps. He just dropped them. Had another one where Joel Klatt, the former quarterback, was like, yeah, that's on him for the handoff exchange. Threw another one right to a guy. No, I feel for Nebraska fans.
Yes.
Because that defense just got tired to me.
Yeah.
And I think the world of Sean Lewis, who is the former Kent State head coach, who's now the Colorado offensive coordinator. They're too talented to continue to give so many chances, because Shedeur Sanders is tremendous at extending plays. He's very accurate. It's almost like he was a four-star quarterback.
Yeah.
It's almost like Travis Hunter was the number one player in the country. Turns out when you have a couple of those guys and you're able to get them the ball in space and let them do what they do, or let Shedeur just kind of run around and be really good, yeah, your defense is going to eventually give up points, especially when your offense can't stop freaking turning the ball over. So that's where I feel for Nebraska fans, because that defense is good enough to get them to a bowl game. I will stand by that. But if your offense, and specifically your quarterback, is just going to continue to be an unmitigated disaster, I don't know what to tell you.
Yeah.
You hitched your wagon to the wrong pony.
Yeah, ultimately the turnovers is what did them in. And you know, Colorado was able to find a rhythm in the second half as well. They did start to run the ball a little bit better. They still only amassed 58 yards of total offense with a number of big losses. You know, Shedeur Sanders ended up getting sacked a couple of different times. You know, his ability to extend plays is great, but also his ability to hold on the ball too long can get him in trouble at times. But you know, he is very talented, and they definitely have some talent there. I'm interested to see Colorado going forward, just to see if they have enough depth to really to make this work. I think Nebraska eventually finds a way. I think they'll improve as the season goes on. I think you're right, Ryan. Their defense is good enough. But
it just comes down to, like, the defense will be good enough, but does the defense get the Northwestern treatment by October, November, yeah, where they're just on the field too much?
Yep.
Because Jeff Sims can't stop turning the ball over,
yeah,
and putting them in tough spots.
Yeah. And ultimately he got benched, but yeah, it's a tough situation that they're in. You know, one bad decision. I shouldn't say one bad decision, but yeah, that transfer portal selection was bad.
Again, we're probably overreacting, because that's probably the worst eight quarters that young man has played in his entire life. But there's not much else to say other than he is the issue. And it shocked me that Matt Rhule kept going. He went back to him to start the second half.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's also like, how bad is the backup? But there's a lot of things. There's optimism for Nebraska. There is. And it starts defensively. But my goodness, that quarterback is an issue.
Yeah. All right. So the Boilermakers traveled to Virginia Tech to take on the Hokies and walk away victorious. But it did take
probably the longest start to finish game time game, yeah, in Big Ten 2023.
It did include a 6-hour rain delay.
Oh, my goodness.
So, yeah, you know, 24-17, Hudson Card had a pretty solid ball game. I know that many people were high on him coming into this game. 23 of 34 for 248 yards. He did have a rushing touchdown. I saw that highlight, so I had to look at the stats, but he did have a rushing touchdown as well. All in all, you know, I don't think Virginia Tech's particularly good. I'm not trying to say that Purdue is great either, but you know, winning on the road means something, and they went on the road against a Power 5 opponent in the ACC and found a way to get a victory. Yeah, all in all,
it's hard to win on the road wherever that may be, and especially for a team like Purdue, lost a close one to Fresno State the week before. They go up 7-0, and then in how many hour rain delay / lightning delay it ended up being, they end up going up 17-0. And then blowing that lead all in the second quarter, so it's tied at halftime before getting a touchdown in the fourth quarter. But and kudos to Ryan Walters for being able to, because Virginia Tech, I think, is thought to be a bowl team, I think, the way I understand it anyway. But they were able to get it done on the ground more or less. Devin Mockabee, 95 yards and a touchdown. Tyrone Tracy, 51 yards and a touchdown. But it's tough to win on the road. And for them to be able to go in and respond after losing at home to Fresno State, kudos to Ryan Walters.
All right, so Iowa travels to Iowa State, and in Ames gets a victory 20-13. One thing to note, Ryan, the total points amassed there were 20. Ryan, how many points did that Iowa offense actually score?
13.
Yeah, because they had another pick six. On the day, Cade McNamara, 12-22, 123 yards. You know, Iowa rushed 29 times for 112 yards. I didn't really think that the rushing attack was real fluid. It didn't seem to be terribly consistent. Patterson had a better day statistically than Caleb Johnson. I still think Caleb Johnson is probably the better back. But ultimately, you know, I think Iowa has having some early season growing pains again. I think they'll get better as the season goes on. Their defense, you know, once again bails them out because offensively they, you know, they weren't great, but they did enough and they found a way to win once again against Iowa State.
And another defensive touchdown, which I need to get this off my chest because I don't understand where this narrative comes from other than I was angry about Iowa always scoring, which they had another pick six in this game. But Iowa fans hate me, number one, because I cover Minnesota. But number two, I'll get tweets every week, every time there's an Iowa turnover. Is that luck too? Is that luck too? None of this is luck. Phil Parker is outstanding at what he does. I'm not disputing that. I think they're number one in college football in the last 10 years or 8 years, whatever it may be, in interceptions forced. It's just Rocco Beck throws it right to Sebastian Castro, who does a great job of reading the out route, walks in for a touchdown, and I was able to win because of it, or else it's 13-13. I just – my worry with Iowa, if I'm an Iowa fan, is Cade McNamara is clearly not 100%, and I don't think he will be 100% for the rest of the season. And here we are once again of Brian Ferentz opening script-ish good, and then the thing kind of just falls apart more or less. I just – Iowa's defense is forever going to keep them in it. Joe Evans, to me, was just a man possessed at times. I mean, they were – that Iowa defensive front, just like it always is really good.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not a good Iowa State team.
No.
I believe Iowa State is without their starting quarterback, their starting running backs. They all gamble on sports. And I just – that's not a good Iowa State team. I don't think they're thought of to make a bowl game. I understand it's a rivalry game. I understand things go wonky and things like that. I just have my reservations about this Iowa offense. Now, in the end, it may not matter because you look across the rest of the West, and we'll get to Northwestern in a minute, but they're still dreadful. Purdue, fringe bowl team, copyright MV of DT right there. I mean, you got Wisconsin having their issues. They'll still win seven, maybe eight games probably. But it's going to run through the – I will continue. I said it before the year, and I'm going to say it again. The West is going to go through Iowa. Just the way their schedule plays out, and then for things – and they get to take on now a incredibly dreadful Western Michigan team who in year one is hot garbage before they have to travel to Penn State in 2 weeks. But to me, the Iowa offense doesn't look much better. Now, Cade McNamara can actually complete competent throws – we're still talking about a team that only had 235 yards of offense in this.
All right. So, Michigan wins 45-14 and,
Michigan State wins 45-14 and breaking news as of 7 seconds ago.
Yes.
Mel Tucker has been fired.
And it's not for this game.
No, it's for, wow. I mean, this has truly just happened less than 30 seconds ago.
I got to imagine this is Murphy tweet with cause in some way. But, yeah. Oh, man.
So for those of you who are thinking to yourselves, I'm going to have to do more research now. Why did Mel Tucker get fired? Well, there was a news report that came out around midnight on Saturday night that Mel Tucker is being investigated for allegations of sexually harassing Brendan Tracy, who is an activist slash rape survivor, and he admits to doing some interesting things while on a phone call with her, which I will let you get into.
We don't need to talk about the specifics,
but Mel Tucker being out at Michigan State,
what a story though. Like, one season, wow. Huge extension to fired in like two seasons.
So they get out underneath the giant contract. And now Michigan State is going to be a job that I think is going to have a lot of interest in it because they have a couple of great boosters within their NIL program. It's a roster that you can certainly recruit to with that, especially with transfers. But it is going to be very interesting to see what happens now for Michigan State here going forward, because oh, by the way, in 6 days, they have to take on the number 8 team in the country at home at Washington, has to travel to East Lansing. Minnesota obviously plays them at the end of October. Which way does this team go now that their head coach has been fired? I don't know what to think, but I will certainly be getting my popcorn and kind of following along with this thing. But Mel Tucker fired as the Michigan State football coach.
So that's the first time we've run into like breaking news doing this podcast. Well, probably not. Yeah, let's wrap this up. Okay, UTEP was a favorite, Ryan, and they lost 38-7 at Northwestern this week. That was
tied
a surprise.
7-7 at half.
Yeah.
And then the Northwestern Wildcats pour it on in the second half. I mean, UTEP's a bad team.
Yeah.
I think Vegas kind of overreacted a little bit in week one with how bad they looked against Rutgers. I think Rutgers' defense might be that good because this is a UTEP team that lost to Jacksonville State coming into the game.
Mm-hmm.
But good for David Braun and good for Northwestern to finally get on the win and the right side of the win column. Passing game didn't look great. Ben Bryant, 11-17, 116 yards. I mean, they ran the ball a little bit better. But to me, good for Northwestern. They finally got on the board, Luke.
Mm-hmm. Maryland wins 38-20. You're like, oh, that's nice. They beat Charlotte. Well, they were down 14-0, Ryan, and after
NBC,
the first quarter.
National television, you're down 14-0 to Charlotte.
And then at halftime, it was 14-9. They ultimately ended up putting up 29 points in the second half and winning 38-10. Tagovailoa had two picks on the day. He was also a 25 of 36 for 278 yards. Yeah, man, what a game. I didn't get to watch any of this game, but just statistically, like, this is interesting.
Ike White now plays for Charlotte.
Oh, yeah.
But he didn't register a catch. That's former Gopher receiver is who I'm referencing here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this thing was going to go a lot differently. I thought
likewise
Maryland was going to win by 3 touchdowns, certainly, and they did. But the way that they had to fight, scratch, tooth, do whatever you might want to, I mean, it was a grind for them. Roman Hemby looked good. Obviously, 20 carries, over eight yards per carry on those. But Maryland survives and advances on national television to take on Virginia next week.
Yeah, and the pick six obviously helped Charlotte. You know, that was big for them. I did see a highlight, and I'm not sure if Charlotte's head coach is this guy with the sleeveless hoodie, but, man, what a look. I love it. All right. And then just to wrap this up, Rutgers gets a rivalry win against Temple. You know, an East Coast rival there, 36-7. But Ryan, I would say after the third quarter, only being up 13-0, I think you probably had some nervous Scarlet Knight fans.
Yes. It's, Minnesota East. And Kirk Shiraka and Joe Harris-Simiak. Yeah, I mean, they figured it out in the fourth quarter because it got, I mean, Temple is okay. But they're, again, you're a Big Ten team and you're whatever they are now, Greg Schiano. Their tailback is really good.
Yeah.
It's Monahay.
Yep.
Is the young man's name. 28 carries for 165 yards. Physical runner. I mean, reminds me of kind of what Mo Ibrahim was for Kirk Shiraka. The last few years, they certainly lean on him a lot. Gavin Wimsett, he was fine. The play action game is what got him going. Only 10 completions, but for 198 yards, that's nearly 20 yards per completion on the day.
Mm-hmm.
But the story is the Rutgers defense only allows 7 points. I mean, Joe Harris-Simiak's trying to learn from his mentor and Joe Rossi, stops the run, forces turnovers, gets off the field on third down. I mean, to me, the question is going to be, as they continue to move forward here, now they face the Virginia Tech team this upcoming weekend. I mean, both Wisconsin and Iowa got to play Rutgers this year. So maybe if Rutgers defense continues to hold up as this thing moves forward, it could get awfully interesting, and maybe the Scarlet Knights can surprise a couple of people this year. We'll see.
All right, so just to close this out, Brett McMurphy tweeted, Mel Tucker fired as Michigan State's head coach. Yada, yada, yada. Secondary coach Harlan Barnett will serve as interim head coach with former coach Mark D'Antonio expected to assist in an unidentified role.
Jeez. I mean, this...
Like, I mean, I get the firing, but like bringing D'Antonio back...
I think it's all hands on deck for the rest of the season for the Spartans. And if I was a Spartans fan, boy, I don't envy you for the next 10
months,
the next 10 weeks, 3 months. I am going to be incredibly interested to see what the names are going to be around that job. Because like I said, especially with the divisions going away and the amount of NIL support and booster support that Michigan State has, plus a pretty good recruiting base, I would say, just in the state of Michigan, this is going to be one where I'm going to be very curious to see what the names are going to be. The last thing I want to say, Luke, before we let the people go, North Carolina next week. They're the number 20 team in the latest AP poll that came out today. I would say this. I think there's going to be a lot of points on the board. The first line for this game has actually just come out. Do you want to guess what it is?
I would assume that it's North Carolina by 6.
You are correct. I think the line's 5.5 or 6. North Carolina's a favorite. So I would imagine that Vegas is going to put an over-under on this game probably around 28-21, maybe.
Yeah, that seems 31, fair.
31-24-ish is what they're going to think. North Carolina is beatable. I mean, you saw App State give them everything they wanted and more in a double overtime game at home for them last week. It all comes down to explosive plays, something we're going to talk a lot about. But for those of you going to the game, I'll see you there. I mean, I think there's going to be a large contingent of Gopher fans traveling to Chapel Hill, to Raleigh there. So if you see me walking around outside the stadium before the game, give me a holler.
All right. Again, I want to thank everybody for listening. You know, if you're traveling to the game, we'll try to get our preview episode up on Wednesday sometime. Hopefully you'll be able to download that and listen to it on your plane right out there. Have a ton of fun in North Carolina if you're going. Again, thanks for listening, and go Gophers.